Well, welcome. Good morning. Glad to see you guys today. I'm Brent. I'm the lead pastor here at Ashworth, and we are coming to the end, nearing the end of the series we've been in the last several weeks where we are looking at this topic here. You've been lied to, and we're sorry about that. Where every week we're trying to address some of the misconceptions that people have about faith and maybe some that we have even had about faith, and we know sometimes those outside the church can certainly carry. And today, we come to a topic that I believe many of us may struggle with at different times, but because it's kind of the dirty little secret of Christians and it's the dirty little secret in church, we just usually don't admit it. And honestly, some of the statements we've already looked at through this series can actually even feed into it a little bit. And it's this idea of this right here, that if you're really following Jesus, if you're really a Christian, if you're really committed to Jesus, then it means you will have faith and never have any doubts. Now, have you heard that before? Have anybody ever communicated that to you? That if you have faith, if it's a real faith, now you may have a fake faith, and that's how you know it's a fake faith, because it has doubts. But if you have a real faith, if you're a really strong Christian, then it means you would never have any doubts at all. And if you've heard this before, I just want to tell you, you've been lied to. And I'm sorry about that, because as you think about this, it is something I think that many of us have heard throughout our life. But as I said, some of the messages, even that we've talked about so far, have kind of fed into this idea that faith means no doubt. What do I mean? Well, think about the very first week we kicked off this series. The idea that we looked at was the statement that says, God will not give you more than you can handle. Now, what happens in your life when you have more than you can handle? You're overwhelmed, you don't know what's going to happen, and you really want to be a strong Christian. You really want to be a good Christian and follow Jesus, but life gets overwhelming, and little by little, doubt begins to creep into your mind. You begin to have questions. You know, this morning in the first service, we sang a song, and the chorus has the lyrics that say, "You are good, you are good." And you know, if we're really honest, sometimes when we're in the midst of difficulty, it's hard to sing those songs. And we wonder, is God really good? And we begin to doubt and ask those questions. Or even as Pastor Ryan spoke last week on the idea, the lie we said that the Bible is nothing more than God's little instruction book. If you grew up in church like I did, if you went to Sunday school like I did, and you heard all these stories from the Bible like I did, you just grow up and you believe it. There it is. It's all there, right there. But what happens when you venture off to college one day and you find out that the world is just a little bit bigger than you thought it was, or maybe your church led you to believe it was? And I don't believe that college professors are from the devil and they're all out to make us pagan atheists or anything, but they are challenged. They are encouraged to make us ask the bigger questions of life. And what happens when your Sunday school story faith of infancy and childhood confronts the bigger philosophical questions of life in college, and those two don't really line up? And if, before you know it, doubts begin to swirl around in your mind. You see, that's what I want us to consider today, is how do faith and doubt work? Are they mutually exclusive? Can you have faith and never doubt? And can you have doubts? And does that mean you don't have faith? How do these two interact together? That's what I want us to look at today. But first, I want to kind of examine and say, where does this idea even come from? Is there a biblical foundation or source that drives kind of this idea that faith means no doubt? And as with most of our statements that we've been looking at, the answer is yes. Almost all of these are founded in some type of scriptural basis, whether or not it's in context or really we understand the fullness of what it's saying is another question. But there is this idea of faith and doubt not working together in the Bible. And let's begin by looking at Jesus and how he talked about doubt. There's a couple of stories that came to mind, and one of them is in Matthew chapter 14. Jesus has had a busy day. He's been working the crowds and doing miracles and all these things. And at the end of the day, he sends the disciples in a boat to get across the lake, and he's going to go spend some time by himself and pray and recuperate from the day. And in the middle of the night, the disciples, they're struggling to get across the lake. The winds are fighting against them. There's waves and they're struggling. And all of a sudden, they look outside the boat and they see this figure coming towards them. Now, what we need to understand is that the lake, the sea, was associated with demonic activity. So when you saw a figure out in the sea, you immediately thought it was something terrible, a demon, a ghost, something. And so they're terrified. They're like, is it a ghost? And Jesus is like, settle down, guys. It's just me. That's the Brent Clark interpretation, by the way. I think Jesus probably had a much better sense of humor than the gospel writers tell us. But he says, hey, it's me. And of course, Peter, the ever stick my foot in my mouth kind of guy I can really relate to, he's like, well, if it's really you, Jesus, tell me to come out there and walk to you. You know, Jesus is walking on water. It's this miracle. And he's like, Peter, come on out. Come join me. The water's just fine. And so Peter gets out of the boat and he begins to walk. And as he's outside that boat, he begins to look around and he notices the wind and he notices the waves and he takes his eyes off Jesus and all of a sudden he begins to sink. I find it fascinating. He doesn't drop like a stone. It says he just begins to sink. And in that moment, Jesus reaches out his hands and he lifts him back up and he walks him back to the boat and they're all safe and secure. And Jesus in that moment looks at Peter and he says, you have little faith. Why did you doubt? And we read that and we go, well, Jesus said, don't doubt. But did he? He's really asking more the question of why did you doubt? He's not making a statement about doubt. In fact, he's looking at Peter, and we know about Peter's life that Peter, this is not a moment where Jesus is like, I'm done with you. It's actually a moment of growing for Peter. It's actually a moment where his faith is strengthened and deepened by what he just experienced. Another example with Jesus and his disciples is Thomas. We lovingly refer to Thomas as Doubting Thomas. Wouldn't you love to have that adjective attached to your name? Doubting Brent. Oh, awesome. Could we find something else? We know that after Jesus died, was buried, and resurrected, Jesus first appeared to Mary Magdalene and the women. And we know that this doesn't get a lot of press. You know, it's mentioned in the Bible, but it says the women went and told the disciples, but it says that the disciples initially didn't believe them. I mean, they were like, oh, you women are crazy. You don't know what you're talking about. But in that moment, Thomas is not there with them. And so the disciples come after they encounter Jesus and they believe, they get their proof and they're like, Thomas, you're not going to believe this. Jesus is alive. It's amazing. And Thomas is like, nope, don't believe it. And Thomas makes the statement. He says, unless I see it for myself, unless I can touch it, I'm not going to believe it. About a week later, the disciples are all together. It says Jesus appears in the room with them. And he comes to Thomas and he looks at Thomas and he says, Thomas, put your fingers here. Go ahead, touch my side. Reach out your hand and put it in my side. And then he tells Thomas, he says, stop doubting and believe. And right here, we hear it with Jesus' own words. He says, stop doubting. Don't do that. Believe. But even then, I find in this moment an interesting encounter because this isn't really technically a rebuke of Thomas, but an encouragement for Thomas to move forward in faith. To move forward. Don't fall back, but to move forward. And then there's one other passage in the New Testament that really trips us up. Because this is the one I think it's the biggie. It's found in the book of James. And James chapter 1, that James writes this. He says, if any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. But when you ask, you must believe and not doubt. Because the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea, blown and tossed by the wind. That person should not expect to receive anything from the Lord. Such a person is double-minded and unstable in all they do. Talk about an indictment on somebody. Wow, you are unstable. Whew, not the way you want to be described. And as you read James chapter 1, it's like case closed. Do you have doubts today? Stop it. Don't do that. Fake it till you make it. Convince yourself otherwise. And as I say those words, you're sitting here going, well, that sounds good, but it doesn't really carry a lot of weight, does it? It's silly to think we can convince ourselves into the faith. So what do we do with these passages? Do they tell us that faith means no doubt? You know, we can look at those passages and we could say, yes, I'm founding my faith on that. I will never doubt. And there's some other sides of this we'll look at in just a moment. But what I think the challenge is for us is to not just look at a few verses here and there, but to examine these verses against the entire narrative of Scripture from Genesis to Revelation and ask ourselves the question, do these verses line up with what we see laid out in the rest of Scripture? Because I know when I begin to read Scripture, if I go back even to the Old Testament and I go to the book of Genesis, I see a man named Abram, who's later called Abraham. And God comes to Abraham and he tells him, he says, I'm going to give you a child. And you're going to be the father of a nation. There's going to be so many of your descendants, they're going to be numerous, you won't even be able to count them. And after this first encounter, I read that Abram doesn't necessarily believe God. He says this is going to happen with his wife Sarah, but Abraham decides to short-circuit the process a little bit. And he says, well, you know, his wife is like, well, I've got this handmaid Hagar. Why don't we help God out a little bit? You can have my maid here and have a child with her. And as we know, that really wasn't God's plan. It was kind of Abraham stepping in to kind of do his own thing. But what triggered him to want to do that? You know what it was? Doubt. And then after Ishmael is born to Hagar, and Abraham and Sarah kind of sends her away and refuses to have anything to do with that, God comes back and says, I'm reiterating my promise to you, Abraham. I'm going to do this through you. You will have a nation from you. You will have descendants. And you know, you read in Genesis, and you know how Abraham responded this time? It says, Abraham fell face down. He laughed and said to himself, will a son be born to a man of 100 years old? Will Sarah bear a child at the age of 90? Now, I don't know about you, but to laugh in the face of God does not seem like a man of strong faith. I mean, maybe that's just my interpretation of it. But what conflicts me is I read about Abraham and I see a man that I can relate to that hears words from God and doubts what he hears. And then I jump to the New Testament and we go to the book of Hebrews. And there's a chapter in the book of Hebrews, chapter 11, that is by affectionate terms called the faith chapter of the Bible, because over and over it says by faith, and it lists these individuals who are credited with having great faith. And would you like to guess who's listed at the beginning of that list? Abraham. How is it that Abraham could show such doubt in his life in interacting with God, and yet in the New Testament, when he's remembered, he's shown to be a man of great faith? Something doesn't really match up there. You could look at David. David, who is called in the Bible a man after God's own heart, picked by God to be the king of Israel. And yet we can go to the Psalms, and when you read something like Psalm 17, you read this: how long, Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and day after day have sorrow in my heart? Now, I don't know. That doesn't sound like the words of a very confident man to me. It sounds like the man who's in the pit of despair, who wants to trust and believe that God is there, but in these moments of real honesty, he's looking up, he's reaching out to God, and he knows he's dealing with doubt. We've already talked about Thomas. We've already talked about Peter. And these men had their doubts. And what I love about this is that in these moments of doubt, Jesus never looked at either one of these men and said, you know what? I'm done. I don't know what I have to do to you to prove to you who I am. I'm going to go find somebody else. Now, to be fair, that's probably what I'd have done. I'd have probably looked at you and been like, it's fine, go home. But Jesus never looks at their doubt as a reason to disqualify them for what they were going to do. They became pillars of the early church. Reading Acts 1 through 15, you read these incredible stories about Peter and how God used him. And he preached on the day of Pentecost. And thousands of people came to faith because of this sermon. And this is the same guy that was sinking in the water. His doubts didn't disqualify him. Thomas, we don't have it in the Bible really what happened to him, but historically we know that Thomas made his way to India. I was talking with one of our Indian friends here in the church, and they said it's not uncommon to see statues to Thomas in India, because it's believed that he made his way there and he took the gospel of Jesus to the country of India and brought faith there in Jesus Christ. doesn't sound like someone who Jesus discredited or threw his hands up and said, I'm done with you. The doubt did not disqualify them. So even though we may find that doubt is discouraged in some places, we see that it's not disqualifying in others. And that's because I believe that we have to really change how we view doubt. You see, doubt we want to look at as a negative, as a vice, as something we should never have. But in the Bible, it's really not viewed either way as a virtue or a vice because it can really go either way. And I would say this morning, that it's because of the doubt of these individuals that they developed a much stronger and deeper faith. That if we don't struggle with the questions, if we don't go through periods of doubt, our faith will be surfacey, but it's through the doubt, through the circumstances, through the challenges that we find a stronger and deeper faith. You see, as we think about even that statement that faith means no doubt, there are a few things that it implies or assumes that I think are wrong. So if faith means no doubt, it assumes that doubt is the opposite of faith. We kind of set these up as polar opposites to say faith or doubt, one or the other. But doubt is not the opposite of faith. Unbelief is the opposite of faith. Doubt is not. Doubt isn't just not the opposite of faith. Doubt is actually a part of faith. It's a stepping stone. It's something that's critical as we grow in faith. And just like faith means no doubt, assumes that doubt is the opposite of faith, it also does not mean this. It means, we kind of assume that it means faith means certainty. For author Philip Yancey wrote this. He says, doubt always coexists with faith, for in the presence of certainty, who would need faith at all? And isn't that true? You see, somewhere along the way in the church, we decided that the strength of our faith was determined by the psychological certainty that we had. And I just don't believe that's the case. You see, because if this is the case, if it's all about being certain, then the one thing we need to do is we need to fight every doubt we ever have. We need to fight every question that comes to our mind. And in doing so, it means you need to stop reading books. You need to stop listening to podcasts. You need to stop watching videos. You need to stop learning. Because if certainty is the key, you need to stop at the moment you came to faith in Jesus Christ and don't go anywhere else. Because otherwise, if you listen to something and if you read something, whoo, you might actually have a different thought than something you were raised with. And then the questions come in, and then the doubts come in, and then your whole faith is just shot. And it can't be like that. But how many of us have the same faith that we had when we came to faith to start with? I came to faith when I was 16. I grew up in the church. But I'm going to tell you, I would have a big, long talk with 16-year-old Brent who came to faith and some of the things he believed. My faith has grown. My faith has developed because of my experience in life. My faith has been tested. You see, it's like my marriage. In the absence of difficulty, in the absence of doubt, in the absence of questions, it's not the absence of these things that caused my marriage to get stronger. It was through those things that allowed my marriage to become stronger and deeper than it was 24 and a half years ago when Carrie and I said, I do. There's a depth there now because of what we've experienced, because of the doubts, because of the difficulties that has led to a deeper and stronger marriage. Now, I understand that when it comes to doubt, one of the things we want to do is we want to really put up our hands and push away because we don't want to have anything to do with it because our entire lives are based on this faith. Our entire eternal destiny, our purpose for living, our existence is centered around our faith. And there is nothing scarier than to think you might be wrong. But what kind of faith do we really have if it can't stand up under scrutiny and questioning? If our faith is so weak and anemic that one little question or one little doubt can just destroy it, what type of faith, what kind of faith can we really say we have? I know some of us grew up under systems that discouraged questions. They discouraged doubting. But do you know what studies now show us? It says that kids who grow up in environments that encourage questions, and you allow teenagers to actually wrestle with these difficult questions, those are the kids that will develop a deeper and a lasting faith. There was a book written a few years ago called Sticky Faith that kind of highlighted this research that they'd done. They said, what creates a sticky faith in kids? And it's not the ones that say, this is the Bible, it's said, it's settled, believe it and move on. It's the ones that said, you know, this is a place of honesty and authenticity, and we can open up, and we may not have all the answers, but you can ask those questions, and we can explore them together. And your doubts aren't an automatic disqualification for being a part of us. In fact, your doubts are welcome here. So that's a couple of the things we assume that doubt and faith are opposites, and they're not, but we also assume that faith is certainty, and faith is not certainty. But also one of the things I think this statement assumes, it assumes that faith is just simply proper theology. It's a set of beliefs. We assume that faith means just believing right things. And unfortunately, you know, the Bible does you talk about faith in this way, but it talks about it so much broader. And it's really sad when we reduce our faith down to just believing a right set of beliefs. Because Jesus didn't come to this earth, he didn't die on the cross, he didn't rise from the dead for you to believe right things. He did that so that you would have a deeper, dynamic relationship with God. That's why he did what he did. There's an author and professor named Dr. Richard Beck, and he wrote, he says, for many Christians, faith simply means belief. Belief is taken to mean I think proposition X is true. And so faith becomes an abstract, intellectual, cognitive, and rationalistic process. And the implication is that if you can get your intellect in line, then you don't have to have faith. But in the Bible, faith is never understood to be unshakable intellectual confidence. In the Bible, faith is more similar to perseverance, obedience, covenant faithfulness, or worship. We can't reduce faith down to right thinking about proper things. It's deeper than that. It's not an intellectual assent. And see, I think when we believe that faith is just believing right things, it goes back to last week's message when Pastor Ryan talked about the things that can happen when we become literalist about everything. We become rigid, inflexible, legalistic, uncompassionate, and our faith becomes static. But faith was never meant to be static. Again, faith was meant to be a relationship. Give and take, moving forward, steps back, working together, just like your marriage, just like the relationships in your life. They grow and they develop, and so should your faith. There's another problem here with this statement. I think it means that we struggle with, and maybe you've heard this, it assumes that good Christians never doubt. Well, if you were a good Christian, you would never doubt. Sometimes I think we believe that. Sometimes I think if I'm a good Christian, I should never have a question or never have a doubt. But see, that assumes that Jesus is threatened by our questions, and Jesus is not threatened by your questions. In fact, what I love is the fact, excuse me, I jumped ahead here. There's one more thing, and it assumes that God cannot or will not handle your doubt. He will not tolerate it. What I love about this interaction with Jesus and Thomas is that Jesus doesn't look at him and say, I'm not going to prove anything to you, Thomas. You should just believe. He doesn't say that, does he? He holds out his hands and he says, go ahead and touch. Look, right here. I've been pierced in the side. Go ahead, put your hand there. Now believe. You see, when we would look at doubt and go, oh, that derails you. That takes you off faith and just messes you up. Jesus looks at it and he doesn't rebuke Thomas for it. He looks at it as an opportunity to reveal himself to Thomas. And I know that's how Jesus responds also to our doubt. It's not where Jesus is looking up in heaven and he's going, you doubted. I'm going to smack you around because you shouldn't doubt. Jesus looks at your doubt and he says, this is an opportunity for me to reveal myself more deeply to you than you've ever experienced before. It's revelation of Jesus rather than rebuking. And I think that is so significant. You see, doubts aren't wrong. They're not right. They just are. In fact, you know, it's necessary, I think, that churches shouldn't be a place where questions are discouraged, but this should be the place where questions are encouraged. Because a biblical faith is grounded in authenticity. You see, I think sometimes people look at faith and they assume that means blind faith. Just don't ask. Just hear it and go, okay, yep, that sounds good. I'm not going to think about it again. But that's not exact. That is not at all what we're called to. You see, we have to understand there's different types of doubt and there's different responses to our doubt. You see, there is a such thing as healthy doubt or believing doubt, and there's actually a thing as unhealthy or unbelieving doubt. And that's where we have to look at. And when we begin to doubt, we have to ask ourselves, which doubt am I struggling with? And it's very easy to figure out which one might be. Because see, it's the question of, is this doubt pulling you forward in faith or pulling you from faith? Is it propelling us toward faith in Jesus, or is it pulling us? You see, an unhealthy faith would ask questions but really not be interested in an answer to those questions. Have you known people like that? They want to ask a question about the Bible, about faith, about Jesus, but they really didn't want you to answer. They really didn't care what the answer was. You see, that's unhealthy or unbelieving doubt. And that is deconstruction without any desire to reconstruct anything in its place. It's skepticism with no desire for clarity. But if you really want an answer, regardless of how long it may take you to get there, you will continue in that pursuit, and that's a healthy doubt. And where unhealthy doubt pulls us away from God, that healthy doubt pushes us forward, strengthens our faith, and goes to depths that we've never experienced before, giving us a solid footing in the nature and character of God, in the person and the work of Jesus Christ and the Holy Spirit. And it's not just what type of doubt it is, it's what you're doing with that doubt. As one author put it this week as I was reading, he says, "You may not be responsible for your doubts, but you are responsible for your response to your doubts." You see, the passage we read in James earlier, it would appear to be very black and white when it comes, when it comes to your doubt. But when we dig into it, we understand that really this is a very focused thing that James is talking about. He's not talking about faith in general. He's talking about praying and asking for wisdom. And in that context, we understand he's not talking about life in general. But also, we understand that when he uses the word doubt, he's talking about wavering. He's like thinking about being in an ocean, like a buoy in an ocean, just kind of bobbing up and down, not going anywhere, or even worse, sitting between two opinions and going back and forth. And specifically, James is saying, when you ask for wisdom, there's two wisdoms. There's God's wisdom and there's the world's wisdom. And don't pray and ask for God's wisdom and go, yeah, but I think I want to move over here. He's saying, no, you can't sit here and be pulled back and forth like this, like you're bouncing up and down in the ocean. That's the unstableness. That's the kind of doubt that doesn't propel you forward. Don't get stuck in your doubt. You can't do that. Don't allow that doubt to paralyze you. You see, when we struggle with these questions, when we struggle with the doubt, the question is, are you willing to bring as many questions to your doubt as you do to your faith? And are you allowing the questions you have to strengthen your faith? Because you need to understand that the questions themselves are not the problem. And I would even assert that the fact that you are struggling at all isn't a sign of no faith. It's a sign of your faith. Because in the presence of no faith at all, would there be anything to struggle with at all? No. So if you're sitting there in doubt, if you're struggling, if you're wondering, the fact that you're sitting there is an indication of faith, whether you realize it or not. You see, I would love for this type of a message to be, let me give you six ways to overcome doubt in your life. Or just saying, don't doubt, just believe, it'll all be good. But I understand that it is through the questions and through the struggle that our faith is really strengthened. And it's where we become aware of who Jesus is. You see, 16-year-old Brent, as I came to faith, was very black and white. There was a right way and there was a wrong way and there was no gray. It's just that was a very hard line. It's just how I was. I've told you before, my mother has said to me, she said, my whole prayer for you growing up is that you would learn to see things beyond black and white. You know, that's part of living in faith. There is a tension that exists when you are a person of faith. And I would love to say certainty is it. Get 100% and you'll be fine. But you know what? Certainty doesn't come, and certainty's not the goal. We're not looking for certainty. We're looking for Jesus. You know, today, we have to learn to live in that tension. We have to be comfortable about living in the tension. And there does come a point where we have to say, do I know enough that I'm willing to take that step and trust, believe? I don't get all my questions answered. That's not ever going to happen. There are a million questions. You could have a million questions answered, and there's going to be a million more. But what I want you to know is that doubt doesn't have to derail your faith. Faith is just about the direction you're moving. And are you moving towards God? What you're struggling with today can actually help you and deepen your faith. You know, when we talk about wanting to be certain, certainty can become an idol in our lives. I have books on my shelf in my office that are one's called The Myth of Certainty. I looked at it for this message. We think we want certainty, but that's not where truth is necessarily found. And when we think we have found certainty, you know what we find? It can produce pride and inflexibility. And our doubts can keep us humble. It helps us acknowledge that, you know what? I don't have this all figured out. And I don't have to be absolutely certain about something in order to believe it. Think about that. I don't have to be absolutely certain about it in order to believe it. You know, our doubts remind us of our humanity. You realize God created you the way we are. You realize God put this inquisitive nature within us. Nobody has to teach a toddler to ask the question why. They just annoyingly do it all on their own. And it drives you nuts, doesn't it? Why? And you get to the place where before you have kids, you think, I will never say this. And then you have a kid and you're like, because I said so. We are created as inquisitive, questioning people. And to think that God wants to look at you and say, well, stop that, is to deny the very nature in which God made us to be. Inquisitive, questioning, doubting people. But we also know that God understands that it's through the doubting that faith deepens and we really discover the nature and the character of God. So my question for you this morning as I end is, do you doubt? Are you struggling in this area? You know, you don't have to remove all doubt in order to take that first step to follow Jesus. Sometimes it's just saying, you know what? I've seen and heard enough, and I'm just going to put one foot in front of the other. Author Philip Yancey, again, he's written some great stuff. He wrote a book called Reaching for the Invisible God, and here's a quote. He said, faith means striking out with no clear end in sight and perhaps even no clear view of the next step. It means following, trusting, and holding out a hand for the invisible guide. You know, there is one thing I think we can be certain of, and the Apostle Paul tells us what that is in 1 Corinthians 2:2. When he tells us, he says, for I resolved to know nothing while I was with you except Jesus Christ and him crucified. Everything else, fluff. Jesus Christ and him crucified. You know, do you have doubts today? Your doubts only have power over you if you are intent on keeping them hidden. I do believe that that's the great problem in the church today, as it says, if you have questions, take that somewhere else. Because then that just heaps on shame on you, and you just feel like I'm the only one. It isolates you. And let me just tell you, you're not the only one. There's people in this room, a bunch of people in this room, who've been exactly where you are and may right now be where you are. And I'm just going to tell you, one of the core values here at Ashworth Church is it says we value authenticity. We would rather be real than religious, because we don't want to play church. We want to be the church. This church is a place where questions are encouraged and doubters are welcomed. We just need to be willing to admit the struggle, that you're not alone. You know, we're not asking you necessarily to even believe the right things. We want you to be real and follow Jesus with all the warts and struggles and questions and doubts that come with it. And if you're struggling with your doubt and you need a little encouragement, let me just tell you, there's a small, strange little book at the end of the New Testament called Jude. It's one chapter. And in verse 22, it says this, be merciful to those who doubt. Okay, that's what we're going to do. And if you're doubting, show yourself the same mercy that Jesus showed to Thomas and Peter when they doubted as well.